On Manage Your Money God's Way, how would you react if your adult child came to you and said, I and the family would like to move back into the house? More and more we read about this situation happening. We want you to be prepared. So we have a few ideas on how to address that request. Plus, we get into a discussion on entitlement and dealing with the attitude that comes with it. It's all on Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry. Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, Sunday afternoons at 5 Eastern on Breadbox Media. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministry. Using the Bible, we show you how God intends for all of us for handling money. And through our small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way, you'll learn how to reduce your debt to zero and lead a debt-free life. Read more about our Bible study at compasscatholic.org. Click on Bible Studies, and there it is, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And when you read through the details of the Bible study and you say, wow, this is for me or this is for us, fill out the contact form and we'll be in touch with you. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic, join me today. And our topic, adult children. So, John and Evelyn, most parents look forward to a visit from their adult children. But what if that visit includes all the luggage, the TV, a 10-week-old baby, a dog, a spouse, and they're asking to move back into the house with you?
Having the son come back, even with his wife, sounds good. 60-inch TV sounds good.
Okay, what if it was a 70-inch television?
You know, there's a number of reasons that adult children may move back home, but the most common reason they move back home is money.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they missed their parents.
No, hardly.
Reason two.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true, Evelyn. Money is a big issue, and a lot of times our kids, no matter how hard we've tried to raise them with a monetary appreciation of life and budgeting and all that kind of stuff, they don't get it until it's too late. And then they get it. Boy, we screwed this up. What are you going to do, you know? From a child's, adult child's perspective, you know, they're going to turn to their parents. They should help me. After all, I'm their child. I deserve that. Don't I? Mom and dad are in good shape financially. Why shouldn't they help me? I studied hard in school. I don't know what that's got to do with it, but I can't find a job in my field. My roommates moved out. Now I can't afford the apartment on my own. I didn't ask to be born.
Sounds like valid reasons, most of them.
I'm not so sure about that, but yeah.
Now, what about mom and dad's perspective? You know, mom and dad are saving for retirement, so they don't have a lot of extra money to throw around to financially support another whole family. You know, they did their job to help the kids grow up. Now they're adults, and the kids should be taking care of themselves. A lot of times, mom and dad will see their adult children wasting money on unnecessary purchases or purchases that, in mom and dad's eyes, are not necessary.
Right, right.
So their attitude is, why should we help them waste money?
You know, while our children grow up and become adults, we never stop being parents, and it's hard to know where to draw the line, what the boundaries are. And the other thing, and this is something we don't think about, I think, quite a bit, is that they're our children, so we really want to help them. But in reality, as we try to save for retirement, we're taking money out of retirement to help the kids. And the big problem with that is you can't get a loan for retirement. You know, you get a loan to buy a car. You can get a loan to buy a house. You can get a loan for your school debts. But you can't get a loan for retirement. And so that retirement savings is really important. And we should not go lightly on it.
So, you remember the saying, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems?
Yeah, there you go.
So, if your adult children are trying to move back home, that could be a big problem in your life.
You know, I think at the beginning of 2015, 26% of millennials, that's kids that are 18 to 34 lived with their parents. So 25%. Well, I can understand 18 to 22 living with their parents. Maybe they're still going to school. Maybe they're going to school close by home, and so they're avoiding expenses by staying at home. You know, if your kid's 30 or 32 or 34 and they're still living at home, where is that? What's that all about?
You know, you were talking a little bit ago about retirement, and I found an interesting statistic on hearts and wallets. Basically, what it said was that 52% of the households that have adult children they do not support are retired. But among those households who do support adult children, only 21% are fully retired. So that retirement money that's going toward adult children is really impacting mom and dad's ability to actually retire.
Or mom and dad are still pretty young.
That's possible too.
If you have children in your early 20s, then they're going to be out on their own, hopefully, when you're in your early 40s. And so that gives you a long time still to be working.
You know, the other statistic from that survey is that the parents who do support adult children are more likely to be worried about their finances.
Yeah, and that's understandable, I think.
So that's a big impact. It's easy to see both sides of the story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, some experts have cautioned against letting adult children move back in under any circumstances. You know, there can be exceptions, like an adult going through a bad divorce, but...
Or maybe a health problem.
Yes, yes, yes. But in general, if they can't keep a job or they don't know how to manage their money and they know mom and dad are going to bail them out, then basically what you're doing by allowing them to move back in is you're rewarding their bad behavior. You don't want to see your kids suffer, especially financially. Also, going through those tough times, that really tends to build their character and make them a little bit stronger and make them hopefully realize that that's not where I want to be.
Well, and the other thing is the more you help them, the more they expect to be helped. So you were talking about rewarding bad behavior. It's kind of like a spiral downward. You know, you give, they expect more, you give more, they expect more. So it's a never-ending cycle.
I'm getting dizzy just thinking about it.
Let me throw a question out there on exceptions. Art and I had this question thrown to us 6-8 months ago. A couple, they're both retired. Their son and wife and two kids had asked to move back into the house. They were struggling financially, but now they think they've righted the ship. They lost their home. So their premise is, if we can live with you for a year, we've learned how to live on one salary. We're going to bank the other so we can afford to buy a house. So what do you say?
Steve, the first thing that mom and dad need to do is to really pray about it. And I know that sounds like kind of a flip answer, but mom and dad really need to understand the change is going to be in their lives and be able to accept the fact they're giving their kids this gift and what it means to the whole family dynamic. Because that can either turn out to be really, really bad or really, really good. It might be a time of bonding with the grandchildren, but it also could be a time where there's so much of a mess it tears the family apart. So mom and dad need to pray about what the Lord intends for them in this situation.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that if the children's or the child and their spouse and their children, your grandchildren, their faith life isn't very strong, and we see that with a lot of millennials. They, you know, they say, yes, I believe in God, but I don't go to church very often. And this is an opportunity, possibly, that you could have a great influence on them. And by sharing your faith life, they're seeing, you know, as adults, they're seeing your faith life as you live your life as an adult and maybe see it in a little different perspective and can be influenced by that. And it gives an opportunity to influence the grandchildren too and help them to become more aware of faith and how it affects their life.
Good point, John. You know, after the prayer, I would say that if the Lord made it clear that they were to move in with you, then it's really important to establish written ground rules and have all the adults sign it that they acknowledge these are the rules.
You mean I can't just give him a big hug and say, sure, it's going to be all right. Come on.
Nope, I don't think so. So, the first thing to talk about is, do you expect them to pay rent?
Okay.
And how much is it, and when is it due?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're setting up in a situation where someone's living with you, then it's important that everybody have the same understanding.
Okay.
And if they can't pay rent, are there projects that they can do around the house to help cover the additional cost burden on mom and dad?
Or maybe daily chores or something like that.
Well, daily chores is the next thing on the list.
Okay.
Definitely. Okay. Who does the cooking? Who does the dishes? Who does the laundry? You know, and that should be over and above any big projects they're doing to cover their costs.
Okay.
Because if you've got two adults living at home and then all of a sudden you have four adults and multiple children, the amount of daily chores that needs to be done expands exponentially as a mom. How's that? So, I mean, it's just little details so that everybody's on the same page. Who makes dinner on which nights? Does everybody expect mom to do all the cooking? Who cleans what areas of the house? Do you take turns doing all the family laundry, or is everybody responsible for their own laundry? Mom and dad need to be responsible for raising the grandkids, but where does the line of discipline come between mom and dad and grandma and grandpa?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the sticky wicket a lot of times.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would put in that agreement is a timeline when the adult children and their family are going to move out.
Well, I like the sound of that.
And like you said before, no hugs. This is all on paper, no casual handshakes. And then as the parent, you need to hold them accountable.
And so if the kids don't want to sign that agreement, probably not a good idea to have them moving back in.
Or if they break the agreement after they move back in, it's time for them to move out.
Move out, yes.
Adult children, that's the topic we're discussing. Trying to help you work through the idea of an adult child coming to you and asking if they and the family can move back into the house with you. When we come back, we'll take you through some other scenarios and possible solutions. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Thanks for sticking around. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. You can read what we're all about and how we can help you become totally debt-free and live a debt-free life. Our web address is compasscatholic.org. John and Evelyn, who are the co-founders of Compass Catholic, join me today. And Evelyn, before the break, the question was thrown out about an adult child coming to the parents asking if he and the family can move back into the home for a period of time. You and John had some excellent points. I love the idea of setting up rules and guidelines, but putting all this down in writing so there's no disagreement. Okay, that's all done. So at that point, I feel that you should welcome them back into your home without making them feel bad that they had asked or they have to ask to come back into the home. Is that the right direction?
You know, Steve, that's a really good point. When the kids move back in, if you have everything signed, sealed, and delivered, and you're all in agreement about what the rules are and who's going to do what, then you just need to love them and welcome them, just like their father welcomed the prodigal son home.
But you know, Evelyn, that goes back to what the way we started that first segment. The best gift that you can give your children is to teach them how to be financially independent when they're still young. If you give them more and more financial responsibility as they grow from toddlers to teens to adults, then you'll be helping them to establish a good, solid foundation for being on their own from a financial perspective.
And that's a good point, because your job as a parent is to raise independent children. And the whole situation of adult children moving back home can be a very sticky subject between kids and parents, as well as between husband and wife from both sets of families.
Right, right.
It's very hard to have two women in a household that are both moms, and very hard, I think, to have two husbands in the household that are both dads. It just sets up dynamics that maybe you're not quite used to. So it needs to be very, very clear that both the mom and dad and the husband and wife of the child couple mm-hmm. are on the same page before the younger children move in with mom and dad. And everybody's discussed how much to help and how much they're going to let the kids handle on their own.
You've got it. You hit the nail right on the head. And it's an art. It's not really a science. It requires a lot of prayer and discernment. And, you got to evaluate not only how well they're handling their money, but the rest of their lives, too. And that can create sticky wickets sometimes.
Sticky wickets.
Yeah.
So in our personal situation with our son, sometimes we've helped and sometimes we've really sensed the Lord working in their lives and we've decided not to help. Many times if we do help, it's not by giving them money, but by providing something for them, like taking the grandkids shopping for school supplies or school clothes, which helps with their budget, but we're not really helping them inflate their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. We pretty much have a no debt for anything policy in our family. So we would never loan money to our son. Here's an example of something that happened a couple of years ago. Our son and his wife and then three children really needed a new car. His truck was 18 years old and had 300,000 miles on it, and her van was probably 7 or 8 years old and had over 100,000 and was needing to be fixed almost on a daily basis. And we were in a position where, while we had a car that was 10 years old, you can kind of tell we don't buy cars real often in this family. But we had a car that was 10 years old, had 150,000 miles on it, but it still ran great, looked great, but we were ready to get a new car. And so
not a new car, a new used car.
A new used car, a different car.
And the point is, they didn't want to buy a car because they couldn't afford to pay cash and they didn't want to be in debt.
Exactly, exactly. They didn't want those payments. So we, instead of just trading the car in, we gave it to our son and his wife, which allowed them to actually sell the truck, which helped them to with their budget. And we gave them a good, solid car that wasn't going to be breaking down every day.
And that was a way to help them stay out of debt, give them something we could afford to give them, and reward their good efforts.
And wasn't alone.
How far do you go to assist them in buying a home?
A lot of it depends on your financial capability, so that, I think that's one thing. But I would never give them something that would interfere with them working together to achieve something, if that makes any sense. I think that having a younger couple save and scrape and work toward the down payment for a house is a good thing for their marriage because it helps them work together and learn how to scrimp and save and talk about money, and mom and dad just swooping in and buying a house gives mom and dad a lot of control that maybe is not good for the young couple.
Right, or even making the down payment for them. You know, if they haven't been able to save for the down payment, what leads you to believe they're going to be able to save for the property taxes or to make repairs on the house or you know, anything else?
This leads to another question. Do you get involved in their finances? Do you start asking questions? They come to you, would you give us the money to make a down payment on a home?
Definitely.
Yeah, because you're talking about a lot of money. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you become the bank. What's the bank going to ask them?
Okay, same questions.
Yeah. Right.
Now, getting back to the housing question, Steve, I might match what they're saving for a down payment if I knew financially they were strapped and they're making every effort to make a good choice.
Yes.
I may offer to, you know, if they're making extra payments on the mortgage, mm-hmm. I may offer to match that mm-hmm. to help them out a little bit. But I would definitely not just buy them a house and hand it to them and have them have no skin in the game, I guess is a good way to put it.
And it's all predicated on the fact that as parents, you're in a financial position that would allow you to do that without really torpedoing your marriage or your finances.
Well, that's a good thing to talk about because sometimes adult children get into problems that are no fault of their own. And when that happens, how much do mom and dad step in and give and solve the problems? that's a situation where there's a lot of different factors to consider. And one of them, like you just said, is how much can mom and dad afford?
In the past, with our son, we would hire him to do jobs that, number one, I didn't really want to do because they were terrible jobs.
Like moving rock into the backyard.
And two, things that we would hire somebody to do anyway. Why wouldn't you hire your child to do that rather than pay some third party, total stranger to make that kind of stuff happen?
Well, if you know the child's going to do it and do a good job. I wouldn't hire them if they were going to do a halfway good job.
And you had just, to go hire somebody else to fix what they did.
Yeah, so, and it depends on their skill set. I mean, a lot of what we had our son doing was landscaping.
Yeah.
And since he's in that type of business, he was the perfect person for that. I don't think I would have had him replumb the house.
No.
You know, that's a great example of doing whatever you can to help your children when something challenging happens to them that's beyond their control, but you're not really swooping in and solving all their problems for them.
It almost sounds like maybe we're saying as parents of adult children, we should have a line item in the budget that says this is the money to help them.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Yeah, well, I don't, that's not our intent. Yeah. You know, we don't believe that that's a necessary thing. If you're doing that, then what are you teaching your child anyway? If you're already setting money aside to help them out, then you're setting yourself up as a go-to in case anything bad happens.
So what do you think the line is between spoiling them and helping them?
That's a fine line. You know, you don't want to give them anything that would increase their lifestyle on a regular basis. It's okay for, you know, maybe you take them on a cruise or you take them on a vacation or something like that. That kind of is, it's a nice thing to do.
And it's something they couldn't afford themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, or you've got family time built into that, you know, to give them money so that they can
buy a bigger, fancier car, a bigger, fancier house.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So let's delve a little bit further into that. So what other guiding principles can we use here if we're thinking about helping adult children?
The biggest thing is the spouse, and we've talked about this many times, you know, your spouse is your primary source of counsel. So mom and dad are secondary.
And that's sticky if they're living in the house with you.
Yes.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
And another thing that we've seen some families do is mom and dad use money to control the kids.
Yep.
And that's never a good idea.
You should be of one mind, you and your spouse, and make sure that as you present and do things for your adult children, that not only do they have the correct attitudes, but you have the correct attitude. Make sure that they have the personality and the ability to handle whatever it is that you might do for them.
And you need to be really clear about where the line is drawn between a gift and a loan. A gift is a gift is a gift. So if you're going to give your kids a cash gift, they get to spend it any way they want. There's no strings attached, because if there are strings attached, then it's really not a gift.
If you're helping them out financially, it's important to distinguish between a gift, something that has, and something that has strings attached to it. You can create a lot of hard feelings on both sides if you aren't careful, and that can be avoided by being sure that these points are clearly understood by both parties.
So the best thing you can give your children is to teach them how to be financially independent when they're young, and keep giving them more and more financial responsibility as they get older. If your adult kids are already having a negative impact on your financial well-being, don't raid your retirement account. Help them set up a budget. Help them work with a financial planner so that they can get their finances straightened out. And you need to work with your financial planner to determine how much support, if any, you can provide to your child.
And I might even help to pay for my child's work with a financial planner.
If you really want what's best for your children, if you want them to remember you as a good parent, keep in mind Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it.
If you missed any of today's show, you can hear it again at CompassCatholic.org. Scroll down to Compass on the Radio. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Just a reminder, this is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. Teaching what the Bible tells us are the best ways to handle money. And I'm not sure if you realize this, but in the Bible, there are 2,500 verses that deal with money and possessions. Think about it, 2,500 verses. I'd say that the Bible would be an excellent resource to turn to if you are struggling with money. Another option is to look into our 9-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You can learn all the details at CompassCatholic.org. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic, join me today. And in these last 30 minutes, let's talk about a topic that can contribute to you getting yourself in debt. It's called entitlement attitude. So, John, what is it that you deserve?
I deserve to go out and have a nice dinner.
Oh, that sounds good. Then I can have a nice dinner, too.
And why do you think you deserve to have a nice dinner?
Because I've been cooking dinner for you for a long time.
Well, at least some of the time.
Most of the time. Steve, he's picking on me.
Do I have to separate you two this soon into the show?
That word deserve, that's... really implies that you have a pretty high opinion of yourself. It means that you inherently believe that you've done something or you have the qualities worthy of a particular award. That you're entitled. You deserve.
So you don't think you deserve to go out for a nice dinner?
Oh, I do, yeah. I'm not sure about you.
Steve.
Can I come?
I might take you out, not him. Now, why do you say it means that you have a high opinion of yourself?
Deserve. What have we done that we deserve to do that?
What about working
it's
hard?
It's kind of like, well, don't you get paid for working? Don't answer that.
Yeah, that was a bad question.
It's all about entitlement. In today's society, we are being totally engulfed with an attitude of entitlement because everybody feels like they deserve something.
So if I say I deserve a shiny, fancy new car, you're not going to go out and buy me one, are you?
Probably not.
But why?
That deserve, it's a word that says you believe whatever sacrifices and choices you've made in life should result in some sort of greater reward than what you've already achieved.
So you're not going to give me a promotion at work because I deserve one either, are you?
Maybe I'll give you a different title.
You know, that's funny that you use that word deserve because one of the first couples that we worked with many years ago, they were engaged, but they wanted to get their finances in order. And when we were going over their expenses, he had purchased a new set of golf clubs. And I don't know why I remember this so in detail. I can tell you exactly where they were seated when we asked this question. Knowing that you're getting married, you have a large bill coming with the honeymoon, the wedding, and blah, blah, blah. Why did you buy golf clubs? The young girl says, well, he works hard. He deserves those. And it's amazing how people can justify some purchases.
By that rule, I should have had 4 sets of golf clubs since the last ones I bought.
You don't deserve new golf clubs. I played with you.
But I will tell you the rest of the story. We see them periodically. We run into them when they're down here visiting their aunt at church. And they keep reminding us they are on track with their budget.
Good for them. That's nice super. To hear after a while, isn't it? That yeah. You've actually helped somebody and they've changed their lifestyle
right. Mm-hmm.
and really made a difference in the future of the family. And that's when you talk about deserve, that's so often what impedes the future of the family when you think you deserve every shiny new thing you see. So let's talk about deserving that new car.
Well, if you go right out and buy that car, the first thing is you're going to assume a big expense.
Because most people can't buy a car with cash.
Especially a brand new one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a loan.
So you're talking $30,000 or $40,000. So you're going to take out a loan, and that's going to gobble down even more money because you're going to have to pay interest on that loan. So now you've got the expense of the car plus the expense of the interest, And you know what else is going to happen when you get a new car? What invariably happens?
The insurance goes up.
Your insurance goes up. So now you're going to spend more money on your insurance. Where's that money going to come from?
Probably from day-to-day living expenses or your savings or your emergency fund or someplace where you should be putting it that's more important.
Exactly. It's going to take money away from the other goals that you hold dear because you've established those goals in your budget, so that goals that you hold dear in life. And if you go out and buy that new car because you deserve it, you're not receiving that new car as some kind of a bonus in life. You're just kind of stripping money away from other things in your life out of a sense that you deserve a new car.
I don't think I'm ever going to want to hear that word out of you again after we finish this program, John.
He sounds like a preacher, doesn't he?
He does. Amen, brother.
So in this sense, the word deserve, the attitude, I deserve, becomes something way different. It's a reason to indulge greatly in something, no matter what the consequences are in the rest of your life, financially or otherwise.
So you're taking money today and putting it off to something where the money would be better used, being used for something more long-term. Like retirement savings or education or buying a house or paying off the credit cards or something like that.
Exactly. It also, it overlooks completely the rewards and benefits that you've already received for what you've already accomplished, what you've achieved
in
your life.
So in other words, if I say I deserve a new car because I work hard, it doesn't take into account the fact that working hard means I get a paycheck. And that's what I'm trading in for my hard work, is a paycheck, not necessarily the ability to deserve a new car or a fancy vacation or restaurant meals.
And that check has to cover all these other items that are in your budget. So you're really just stealing from the rest of your budget.
Well, you know what pops into my mind when people talk about deserving this or that is that you really are taking a lot of things for granted. You're assuming that whatever you already have is not enough, and you're not being grateful to what God has already given you and blessed you with. So you're always looking for more because you deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the truth is that most of us are already rewarded beyond our wildest dreams for the things that we've achieved in our life. You know, think about the average American lives in a state of what you might call perpetual pleasure.
Okay, define perpetual pleasure.
I like that.
Because I haven't seen that.
I like that alliteration. Perpetual pleasure.
And your home is a perpetual pleasure palace, huh? Don't go there, Steve.
Not touching that one.
We have such great affluence, the average American. Now, I know that that you don't think you have that, but when you compare yourself to 200, 300 other million people out there in the world, or 300, how many, what are we, in billions or millions?
Billions.
You know,
billions.
We live greater in the United States than 98% of the world's population.
You know, that really hits home recently when I've been looking at all the news stories that are talking about the refugees that are trying to escape from these war-torn countries where they can't worship and they don't have enough food to eat and they're constantly under battle conditions. And all they're trying to do is find safety and jobs for their families. We're so safe here and so secure, and it's heartbreaking to see that stuff. But you're right, we don't often think about the fact that we have more than most people in the world.
You know, if you compare our lifestyle to the lifestyle of, let's say, King Solomon, you know, one of the wealthiest men in the world in his time, you know, how many thousands of years ago that was, I think he probably would have been jealous of all the stuff that we have. We have homes and devices. We have access to amazing nutritional foods. We have time to spend on leisure of our choosing. It's just pretty amazing. There's a short story I want to tell you from the 1700s. There's a French philosopher. His name was Denis Diderot. And he wrote an essay called regrets on parting with my old dressing gown.
Regrets on parting with my old dressing gown, huh?
It seems that somebody gave him an exquisite gift, a scarlet dressing gown. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff they wore back in the 1700s, okay? And Diderot was so happy to get this gown that he promptly threw his old one away, right? Just, boom, gone. It was funny that as he was wearing this new elegant dressing gown, he noticed how tattered the old gown was because it was so comfortable and it blended into his surroundings. And when he contrasted the new gown with the surroundings, he couldn't help but notice how run down everything else in his house was. He had threadbare tapestries and he had a worn chair and beat up bookcases. But he'd never seen all this before when he was wearing his old gown because everything was basically the same.
Just as shabby as the gown was.
Just as shabby as the gown. So, you know, what happened is that piece by piece, he replaced everything with something that was more closely suited to the elegance of his new gown. And Diderot closes his essay regretting that he ever received this new scarlet robe because that forced him to have everything else come into conformity. Today, the marketing professionals and the consumer research calls this constant reach for conformity the Diderot effect. In other words, they're trying to give us that new thing so that we will upgrade everything else to be as elegant as that one new thing that we just purchased.
And I feel we deserve a break. We'll be right back. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry, and today John and Evelyn Bean are joining in the discussion on a trend that we've seen over the past 10 years. The trend is entitlement. And Evelyn, during our break, you mentioned something that John was sharing about 10 minutes ago.
You were talking in the first half about the vast majority of Americans having more than they realize. And life here is so amazing compared to anything that has existed before in our world. You know, people from even 100 or 50 years ago would be pretty much amazed that we have such incredibly affluent lives as the ones we live here today in America.
You talk about the affluent lives, and I saw a conversation on somebody's blog or Facebook or something about the kitchen wall phone.
Oh, wow.
How many people have a kitchen wall phone?
Nobody.
Nobody anymore.
Yeah.
And actually, a couple of people said, well, I still have one hanging on the wall. It's not connected to anything, you know.
See, and I have a wall phone that is hooked up because I'm too lazy to take it down because if I take it down, then I'm going to have to paint the entire wall.
And
so
then you're going
to... I told Audrey, no, this is retro. Leave it there.
But Steve, that's the Diderot effect we were talking about. And then you'd need new kitchen cabinets and then you'd need a new table and chairs. You'd have to replace the...
Thank you for saving us money, Evelyn. I'll pass that on to Audrey. I don't think she'll buy it, but I'll...
She might want new dishes.
But, you know, to believe that we deserve more is just incredibly arrogant. It also often far exceeds what we've actually earned with our achievements.
Well, we can talk ourselves into thinking we deserve anything.
Yep. There's no question that some of us have worked very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we've already received our rewards for those efforts in the form of pay, in the form of the greater skills that we learned, even in the form of simply being employed. That's a good thing. You may have worked hard for 10 or 20 years, but you did that in exchange for pay, for a degree, but not for additional rewards.
So we're using the fact that we deserve more as an excuse to buy things to indulge in that we probably know we don't necessarily need.
It's kind of like a crutch, you know, The other thing is that it shows a total lack of contentment. Are you content with what you have.
I bet 90% of the Americans would say they're not content. Wouldn't you think so, Steve?
Yeah, easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel I'm content, but I know I'm not.
Yeah.
I know there's one thing that I would love to have.
Yeah.
Audrey keeps saying, just be satisfied with what you've got.
It's taking that phone down, isn't it? It's a Harley.
No, it's a Porsche.
Guilty.
You know, that entitlement attitude, that attitude that we deserve, totally works against an attitude or feelings of contentment. What do we mean when we say contentment? You know, some of the synonyms, words that are similar, maybe you can relate to these words easier than contentment, would be serenity, gladness, satisfaction, happiness, pleasure, gratification.
I think the one that comes closest to serenity, I think contentment is a serene attitude that you don't have to go out and get anything else because you're content with what you have. You don't have that constant sense of acquisition.
Yes. And, you know, Paul addressed all this in his various letters that he wrote. In the first letter of Timothy, chapter 6, he says, if we have food and clothing, we shall be content with that.
Food, clothing, and how much more do we have today in America?
Wow. You know, for the average person, it's so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And we just forget about it. We ignore that. In his letters to the Philippians, he says, not that I am referring to being in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well fed and of going hungry, of having plenty and of being in need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me.
You know, the interesting thing about that is that Paul, who was one of the greatest disciples of Jesus of all times, and he wrote half the New Testament,
yep,
had to learn to be content. No TV, no internet, no catalogs, no magazines, no billboards, no internet shopping, no bitcoins, no credit cards, and he had to learn to be content.
So how do you learn, or how do you teach someone to be content?
It comes from knowing that God owns everything. That has to be the basis of it. If you believe that you own things, then you're all tied up emotionally with them. You're kind of in control of them. And I think that's one of our biggest obstacles to being content. What do you think, John?
If we believe that we deserve anything, it's almost exactly the opposite of being content, of having a healthy personal financial attitude, or even having a good life perspective. You know, for starters, it takes away the sense of wonder and gratefulness for, you know, this amazing bounty that God has blessed us with. Each of us has so much, far more than almost anyone else in human history. We have millions of bits of information we can access in nanoseconds. When was the last time you had a question and you just went to the
browser,
yeah, that's what I didn't want to say a word because everybody's
John wanted
got
me
different.
To talk. He just wanted to
you go to your browser and you type in a question that's not even in the form of the sentence, and boom, you got a million hits.
The last time I did it was yesterday.
Yes,
I was looking for wealth management.
Yes,
and I got 65 million hits in 0.3 seconds.
Yes. And what would have happened if you'd gone down to Carnegie Library?
I would have been wandering around in stacks of books till this day.
You know, sometimes all these bits are really great. Sometimes
it's a little overwhelming when you get 65 million hits.
We have an infinite, amazingly nutritional foods available at our convenience.
Well, think of what it was like 100 years ago.
They probably ate better food than we do.
Well, it was probably fresher. But you don't have to grow it today. You don't have to kill the chicken and pluck the feathers.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my grandmother plucking feathers off of chickens because she would buy them whole from the butcher. Your grandmother did that, or your mom did that, I bet. Wasn't your mom a butcher?
Yeah, well, she did that at the store.
Yeah, not at home.
She didn't bring her work home.
No. I can remember the first time I realized that the chicken we were eating was the chicken
that you were playing with the day before.
Yeah, that was a sad day in my life.
And think about the fact that we have the opportunity to visit friends or relatives who live not just 20 miles away, which would have been, or maybe 60 miles, which would have been a long trip thousands of years ago.
100 years ago.
100 years ago. That today, in 8 hours, we can fly to Europe.
Well, in nanoseconds, we can reach them on the other end of a device.
Yep.
Where we
yep.
can see. I mean, you do that with your grandchildren, don't you, Steve?
Yeah. In fact, we have worked with couples that lived in other states, other parts of Florida, through Facebook, FaceTime, or Skype.
Mm-hmm. And we've had people join our Bible studies through Skype.
That's true.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's more books, more films, more experiences than we can ever fill our free time with. Almost every job in the world is safer and less demanding physically than anything else that has existed before in human history. It's just, we have so much.
Yet we deserve more.
Yeah, we deserve. And that just undercuts the whole thing. It says that everything God has blessed us with isn't good enough.
So we were talking about, John, the other day, the 7 habits of highly effective people.
Yes.
And the scarcity and, what was the other one? Scarcity and
abundance.
Abundance mentality that Stephen Covey talks about.
Yes.
And the scarcity mentality says that there's only so much to go around, and I deserve my piece, and I need a bigger piece, and then otherwise other people are going to get it, and I'm not going to get it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's like a zero-sum game. There's only so much to go around, and you need to get yours and kind of push everybody out of the way in order to have your stuff.
I want a bigger piece of that piece of pie.
Because there's only so much pie to go around.
Exactly.
So that's not really like do unto others as you would have them do unto you, is it?
Well, I'm going to do it before they do it to me.
Yeah. And then there's the abundance mentality. And what's the abundance mentality?
That flows from a deep inner sense of personal worth and security, and it's the paradigm that there's plenty out there and enough to spare for everybody. The possibilities are just endless for creativity, for various alternatives. It results in the sharing of prestige, of recognition, of profit, the ability to make decisions.
So the one is a paradigm that is selfish, and the other is the paradigm that's giving. The scarcity mentality is a very selfish mentality, and the abundance mentality is a very sharing, open, generous mentality.
Exactly.
But the I deserve more is kind of a scarcity mentality where you really are trying to push other people out of the way.
Yeah. So I think the thing that we really want to convey today is that I deserve is a dangerous word. And whenever you see yourself using it or thinking about it, just stop for a minute. You're probably about to make a move that isn't the most beneficial thing in your life. And if you're thinking about what you really deserve, meditate on 2 Corinthians 5:10. It says, "For we must all stand before Christ to be judged. We will each receive whatever we deserve for the good or evil that we've done in this earthly body."
We have run out of time. A lot of excellent information in this hour. If you missed any of today's show, simply go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down to Compass on the Radio, and you can listen to the entire show once again. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry, and you're listening to us on Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.